does LiveWell talk on bronchitis? I'm Dr. Dustin Arnold, Chief Medical Officer at Unity Point Health, St. Luke's Hospital. According to the National Institutes of Health, chronic bronchitis affects approximately 10 million Americans. Join us today to discuss bronchitis and the symptoms, as well as treatment, prevention, and more, is Dr. Brian Lindsay, pulmonologist with Unity Point Clinic Multispecialty. Dr. Lindsay, welcome to the podcast,
first podcast. For having me, yeah.
Yeah. So what is bronchitis?
Yeah, so basically, like, if you just call it bronchitis, that just refers to that there's inflammation in the airways. So, like, in our lungs and going into our lungs are the tubes called bronchioles or bronchi, and those get inflamed and it gets referred to as bronchitis. There's sort of a big difference between chronic bronchitis and acute bronchitis.
Okay.
So
chronic meaning they have it for chronically all
yep,
the time.
Yep.
As opposed to acute, which would be a shorter episode.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
So acute bronchitis is almost always an infection problem versus chronic bronchitis is occasionally infection, but that's not the norm. The normal causes of chronic bronchitis are more chronic things, the big one being smoking.
Do you see in your practice the incidence of smoking going down or staying the same, or what do you think?
I mean, there's definitely like reports and, you know, literature out there that, you know, smoking rates are definitely down, you know, compared to what they were 10 years, 20, you know, 30 years ago. I feel like some of that decrease has leveled off. I feel like when I started medical school and then when I was, you know, initially in training, you could tell more that smoking was going down. And I haven't looked at the numbers lately, but I feel like in the last 5-10 years, the rates haven't changed as much as they were changing, you know, like in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s.
Okay. Just curious. Seems like, and maybe I just notice it, seems like some younger people smoking. And then, you know, we can get into the how smoking causes bronchitis. And then I'll probably follow that up with a vaping question, of course, you know. So how does the smoking cause the chronic bronchitis?
Sure. So the cigarettes, like the smoke itself is an irritant that irritates the airways and like the cells in those airways. And then the big thing with the cigarettes is, you know, they have all those toxic chemicals and add-ons that they put in there, and those get in those airways. You get direct exposure of those chemicals to the airway cells, and it causes inflammation and damage and a cycle where you start to develop, you know, chronic bronchitis. Not everybody who smokes gets chronic bronchitis, but a lot of people do, and it's one of, if not probably, the biggest problem that you get from smoking, the other one being emphysema. Some people will have emphysema without chronic bronchitis. Other people will have chronic bronchitis without emphysema. And then some of my patients, you know, who are smokers who have been smokers, get both chronic bronchitis and emphysema.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that over my career too. You know, sometimes you have that emphysematous patient, cachectic, on chronic oxygen, that doesn't take any inhalers at all because they don't
work.
There's no reactive airway disease at all. I mean, they're like, it does nothing. And then others that are, you know, virtually dependent upon them.
And others where you give them the inhalers and they're like, this is great.
Yeah.
And they really like them and they help a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So if the nicotine and the chemicals and the smoke irritates the airways and the mucus production, et cetera, and it turns into chronic bronchitis, couldn't vaping do the same?
Yeah, it could. There's a lot we still don't know about the vaping and, like, you know, what, you know, kids or even adults who are vaping now, what it's going to look like if they vape for 20, 30 years. And there are definitely concerns that a lot of these people who are vaping, while they might not be showing signs of chronic bronchitis yet, that down the road, we're going to find out that they're getting chronic bronchitis just like the smokers do. Because there's definitely like a, you know, a delay. Like people can smoke for 10, 15 years and be relatively symptom free before the chronic bronchitis will take a hold. And then the problem is once it starts, you can quit smoking and the chronic bronchitis won't go away. So by the time you know you have it, now you have it and you're stuck. And so that's definitely a concern and why, you know, we certainly aren't encouraging people to vape. The other big, you know, since we're talking about the vaping, you know, the big concern is that people start vaping and then are switching to cigarettes. And we know that's happening. So we know that's bad. But we're also concerned that even people who don't smoke, but if they vape and continually vape, you know, long term, there's some that's unknown. Like we haven't proven that it causes that stuff, but we're definitely worried about it.
Okay. What about related subject, but just why I'm thinking about it, marijuana. You know, mm-hmm. I think there's been a group think that it doesn't cause the lung related problems that perhaps smoking cigarettes does, but not so sure that still holds up.
I've definitely have patients who have chronic bronchitis predominantly
from marijuana
use. It's definitely not as common, and we're talking more about heavy users. So like if they don't have some other lung problem, and they're just like, I smoke, you know, marijuana once a week or something like that. I don't know how many, you know, of those people are getting chronic bronchitis. I don't think it's a lot, but I mean, there are people now who are smoking marijuana every day.
Yeah.
Some of them multiple times a day. And it is a little concerning that some people are like, that's getting normalized a little bit. And it can cause chronic bronchitis. There's also, you know, issues with people who have asthma and then are regularly smoking marijuana, are getting more, you know, sort of chronic bronchitis problems. I think that's one of the bigger concerns I have is that you have people who are asthmatic and they're smoking a lot of marijuana anyway, or they already have, you know, chronic bronchitis for some other reason, or because they used to smoke cigarettes and now they're continuing to smoke marijuana, and that is exacerbating the chronic bronchitis that they already have.
Okay. Makes sense. I mean, I'm going to make a generality here and with a hint of sarcasm. Inhaling smoke into your lungs, regardless of the etiology, is just probably not a good idea.
It's not good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually funny that you mentioned it. Like, so one of the, you know, so other people who get chronic bronchitis, like without smoking, are like people who are like welders, or like what we see a lot of is like, what I see a lot of is like, I was a welder and I smoked, because they'll come in to see me and they'll be like 55 and have pretty advanced chronic bronchitis, COPD. And I'm like, I know you smoke, but like, this is really pretty bad. Like what did you do for work? And they're like, I've been a welder for 30 years. And then another example of just like, if you inhale smoke, it's not great, is, and this is pretty uncommon, but I do occasionally get, patients who, older patients who grew up in Africa or rural parts of Asia, who lived in houses where they burned coal or wood to keep the house warm and do the cooking. And some of those patients get COPD and chronic bronchitis without smoking.
Yeah. Or the older patient that, you know, they're starting to die off, but that was born before antibiotics, and they would get the chronic, a bronchial infection, mm-hmm. and get bronchiectasis. I mean, I used to see that quite a bit too.
Yeah.
I mean, those patients are kind of getting up there in age. I think the first dose of penicillin here in town was like 1949, something like that. So mm-hmm. it kind of gives you an idea of that trajectory there. How's it diagnosed? I mean, you can't just listen to someone's lungs and say that's chronic bronchitis. How do you make the diagnosis?
Yeah, to make the diagnosis for chronic bronchitis, you really need to have pulmonary function testing.
So breath testing.
Yeah, breath testing. So, you know, Unity Point, we do, you know, they have like a dedicated breath testing lab in the hospital here. The outreach clinics also have, you know, like in Anamosa and Marengo and Manchester and places like that, they all do breath testing as well.
Okay.
And then we have like some dedicated breath testing capabilities like in the lung office. But you really need breath testing to make the diagnosis.
And filtered cigarettes don't provide any protection.
They do not, no.
So once the diagnosis is made, what's the treatment plan other than reduce the exposure that caused
right.
it, of course.
Yep. Right? So, number one, two, and three is always like reduce the exposure. So if you're a smoker, you know, quit smoking. If you have some occupational exposure that's an issue, you know, what can we do to limit that, to improve that? A lot of that's usually already been done. And then for chronic bronchitis, the majority of the treatment is with inhalers. And then you get into a little bit of, you know, is it chronic bronchitis? Is it emphysema? Is it asthma? You know, is it some combination of two out of three of those to help guide you on exactly like which inhalers, you know, to put people on?
Right.
A lot of the inhalers now are combination medicines. So they have more than one medication in like the same device. Some of them have two medications, like Advair is an old one that people know out a lot about. Breo is another one that has, you know, two medications in it. But there's other ones like Stialto and Anoro have two medications. And then some of the newest medications actually have three medications in one. The two brand names on that are, one of them is Trelegy. That's on TV a lot now.
Yeah, I was going to say the commercials.
And then the other one is Breztri. I don't see as many ads for that one, but it works the same way as the Trelegy.
And it appears to work really well in the commercials. So,
Yeah.
Those people look really happy.
They
afterwards.
Do look very happy. They really do look good in the commercials. I don't know that people look that good after I give them, but a lot of people, when you give them the inhalers, are like, holy cow, like these really help a lot.
Yeah, for the people they're going to help, they do help. I totally agree with that.
It's not like universal. Like we talked about, like some of these patients with emphysema, you give them the inhaler and they're like really not impressed. But then other people, you give them the inhaler and you're like, this is the best. And it just depends person to person, you know, how responsive they're going to be. But in general, I mean, they do help a lot.
Are the newer ones expensive?
They are and they aren't. So like all...
Because like when Advair came out, that was really expensive.
Yeah. So like the list price on the inhalers is expensive. Like if you, you know, if you don't have insurance and you go to buy any of the inhalers, even some of the older ones like Advair, they will be expensive. I mean, upwards of $150, $200. Some of them, like the list price, you know, is $600.
Wow.
You know, all of anybody who has insurance, like at least some of the inhalers will be covered. Depending on like who your insurer is, you know, year to year, they might not cover, for example, they might not cover the Trelegy and the Breztri, or they might not cover Advair and Breo, but just about any insurance will cover one of the drugs in each category.
Right. So you might have to take two inhalers rather than a combination.
Right.
What you're saying. Okay.
And or like you might be like, this year I'm on Advair and I'm doing well. And then for whatever reason, maybe your job changes insurance, or your insurance will just change which one it covers. And next year we might have to stop the Advair and put you on Symbicort instead. But we can almost always find some inhaler that your insurance covers so that it'll be covered. And then usually when they're covered, the copay gets down around the $40 a month range. What I'll tell patients is, like, if I order you an inhaler and you go to get it and it's over $50 a month, I'll tell them to call my office, because maybe we really probably should be getting them on something else if it's over that.
Right. You know, we've talked about another podcast. We've talked about this in, you know, just in professional conversations that, you know, if patients need to let us know if they can't afford their medication, because there's a lot of options out there. It's not just a done deal. And, you know, sometimes I think patients are, they're embarrassed to say, I couldn't afford my medication, or doctor, I'm not taking my medication.
They're embarrassed. And they're also like, I didn't think I should bother you about that.
Right.
I
mean, yeah.
It's one of the things I've learned over time is, and part of it, like, I try to bring it up to be like, listen, these medicines are expensive. Part of our job is to figure out, you know, to some extent you do the breathing test, you see they have the bronchitis. That part is not that complicated to make the diagnosis. You know, the expertise and the work comes in of getting you the treatment, getting the treatment so you can afford it, helping you being able to take it, you know, so that we can, you know, make things work for you.
Makes sense. I think the insurance company actually just have like this little wheel they spin like every year, and then where it lands, that's what they change people to. You know, they're like, oh, Symbicort. Okay, yeah. We're Symbicort this year, guys.
I think what they do is, I think they call somebody calls the manufacturers and says, what can you do for us this year?
Yeah, I'm sure.
How much of a discount are you willing to give us? And then if the answer is not much, then they say, okay, well, then we're not going to put you on the drug formulary. And if they give them enough of a discount, then they'll put them on the formulary for the year.
Yeah. It's so frustrating, though, when it changes all the time.
It is frustrating. And one of the things that's frustrating is, too, is that, you know, if you look at it, like, by the numbers, if you take 1,000 people, like, one inhaler isn't necessarily better than the other. But, like, on an individual basis, even if Advair and Symbicort, you know, technically work the same according to the data, some people just do better on one than the other.
I mean, I've seen patients do better on perhaps a tablet form as opposed to encapsulated form of a medication. I don't know why, but they do.
Yeah,
you know, and then you really have to battle with the insurance company to.
And we do that if, you know, like, if the insurance says we don't want to cover this inhaler that was working good for you, then we have to put you on the new inhaler first. But if it really doesn't work as good, then I can write a letter to the patient's insurance and say, I know you think it's the same, but it's not working the same for them. Can we give them the other one that's not on the formulary this year? And usually the answer is yes. It's just, you know, going through some hoops that we'd rather not have to go through, but that's just the way of the world.
That's just the practice of medicine. I think the take-home point, though, for patients is be sure to ask, because there are resources and the clinics are willing to work with them to get them the drugs they need.
Yeah. Yep. Really, and we consider that like part of the job. It's just part and parcel.
Yep. Totally agree with you there. You know, it's just totally. Well, I know you're brilliant and I can ask you all things pulmonary.
Okay.
And so we're talking about irritating the lungs, this air quality, these Canadian forest fires.
Mm-hmm.
What are you recommending to patients on that? I mean, what's your experience? What are you seeing in your patient population?
Sure. So they are struggling. It has been real. I joked to my friend that I was going to set up a lemonade stand and just start handing out prednisone steroids to my patients out on the street, because when you have chronic bronchitis and then you're getting exposed to this air quality, it can throw them into what we call an exacerbation.
Okay.
Which very similar to like what would happen if, you know, patients who have chronic bronchitis get sick with the flu or when they were getting, you know, COVID or other respiratory illnesses, they're already sort of irritated lungs get kicked up three or four levels and they're going to the emergency room or they're calling my office and saying, you know, hey, doc, I got an elephant on my chest. I can't breathe. I'm coughing up more mucus instead of being clear. Now it's yellow and brown. And so they're struggling. So when they're flaring up, I mean, the best thing to do for like for the air quality stuff is to try to avoid it if you can, you know, to stay inside on those bad air quality days, you know, pay attention to what the weatherman is saying and what you're hearing on the news. And pay attention just to what your eyes are seeing and what you're feeling. I mean, there are some days where I wasn't seeing the news and I am driving into work and I'm like, it's not good today. You can just see it.
Absolutely. Yep.
Try to limit your exposure. If you have lung problems, it's, you know, more important for maybe you to limit your exposure than if you don't. And then if you are flaring up, you know, call your primary care doctor. You know, call a lung doctor if you have one and don't be afraid to ask for help.
And by avoiding exposure, you mean staying inside if you can.
Staying inside.
Masks don't really
The regular COVID masks and stuff really don't offer help. If you're going to get, you know, reduced from the smoke, you really need to use an N95 mask.
Which we remember those from the pandemic.
Yep. And those, if you have a lung problem, a lot of, turns out that wearing those N95s can be pretty uncomfortable.
Oh, they're uncomfortable if you don't have a lung.
Yeah, problem. Exactly. And especially for like any sort of prolonged period.
Yes, totally agree.
I mean, I'm definitely having problems because I have, you know, some patients who have chronic bronchitis and do outdoor work. And, you know, I've written some letters saying, you know, you need to excuse so-and-so from work, you know, on bad weather days or... you're going to have to excuse them now for a few days because they're sick with bronchitis exacerbation. So yeah, it's been a big, big problem. And it's something that I worry about because, you know, I don't know that it's going to be how much better and worse it's going to be in years going forward.
So what's your recommendation to just normal patients that have normal lung function? Should they avoid it or should they minimize if they can, even if they have good lungs?
Yeah. When that number gets over 200, I mean, okay. Really that recommendation is that everybody
at over 200.
Yeah. The over 200, I think it's either over 200. It might even be over like 175, but if the number is over 200, really that advice goes to everybody. If you have the lung problems, once it gets over 100, it's really you should really be trying to limit your exposure. But anybody, once that number, that AQI number gets over 200, the recommendation is for everybody to try to limit their 200. Exposure as much as possible.
Yeah. Good to know. Thank you. That's very apropos and applicable to what we've been talking about or what we've been seeing. You know, it's interesting, and maybe a listener can clarify this, but remember Ralph Beckett, pulmonologist? With Inters PC?
I do not. He was a little bit before my time.
You might have been a hospitalist working for us back then when Ralph was still here. But when he first came to town, there was this initiative to improve the air quality in Cedar Rapids because a lot of the roads were gravel in town.
Really?
And they had this big federal funding to help get the roads paved because of the particulate matter.
Uh-huh.
And so it was a big initiative. And I remember, 380 was coming through, so we moved from A Avenue to Daniel Street Northeast, and I remember our streets being all gravel, you know,
in town.
Yeah, wow. I remember like everything over by the old Iowa Man. That's the neighborhood I grew up in.
Okay,
that was all gravel, and I remember Blair's Ferry Road being gravel. I remember Edgewood Road from 42nd Street to Blair's Ferry Road being gravel. You know, and so this was a big initiative.
That's wild.
Yeah, so Ralph was like either participate in that when he first came to town as a lung doctor and you know, had some insight on that there was a big initiative back then. So we're it's something to watch, you know, and I'm glad you threw out that number at least.
I do direction. Have a couple patients who live more rurally, and one of their issues is they live on gravel roads and they have to watch it when there's like a lot of traffic and stuff to not be outside.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's impressive, you know. You know, just a little history about you. You worked as a hospitalist for us in your pulmonary fellowship.
I did.
Way back when. We've referred on the podcast to the golden age of the hospitals program when I ran it.
So you were running it.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can just say golden age of hospital medicine and people go, oh yeah. They'll totally understand. But, what made you pick pulmonology?
Yeah. So part of what I picked about it is that it's pulmonology and it's critical care. So myself and my partners were all triple boarded in internal medicine, pulmonology, and critical care. And a lot of what I like about it is the variety, is that I work in the clinic. I also work in the hospital taking care of patients who are like on general hospital floors. And then also, you know, some of the patients who are the sickest of the sick patients we have in the intensive care unit. And so I get to specialize in pulmonology and be like an expert in the lungs, but I still get to dabble in the rest of the organ systems. I also like that as the pulmonologist and doing that in the hospital, you get to work with the other specialties a lot. You're not as much, you know, just taking the care of the patients by yourself. A lot of times, you know, I'm working with the hospitalist because they're asking me to see the patient, or I have the patient in the ICU and I have the kidney specialist on and the heart doctor on, and maybe I'm calling a surgeon to come check them out. And then the other part I like is I would not have been like a hospitalist long-term for me. Like I would have been I like working in clinic and getting to know patients. And, you know, I've had patients now that have been my patients for 7-8 years here in town, and getting to know them and keep following.
Best part of the job.
And
it is the best.
I like that too. Having that, but then also getting to mix it up and get out of the clinic to keep things fresh.
I mean, I know it sounds kind of corny, but the best part of being a doctor is building those relationships with patients.
It is. It's a lot.
It really
fun.
Is. I mean, that's fun. That's the best part of the job. It's fun. I mean, that's just the way it is. So, Dr. Lindsay, thank you for joining us and informing our listeners about bronchitis. And we got off into all things pulmonary. We might have maybe a podcast, recurrent podcast called All Things Pulmonary. And we're going to have you back.
Okay.
You know, I like that. Once again, this is Dr. Brian Lindsay, pulmonologist with Unity Point Clinic, multi-specialty. For more information, visit unitypoint.org.
Thank you for listening to Live Well Talk On. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your family, friends, neighbors, strangers about our podcast. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, be well.